Governments have begun work on implementing the 2015 Paris Agreement to limit global warming. They're holding week-long talks in Germany to thrash out the details of the plan agreed to at the UN climate change talks last December. So can they agree to accelerate action to limit warming, as the UN climate chief Christiana Figueres wants? Naomi Klein is a Canadian journalist and climate activist. She's just been named as the recipient of the prestigious 2016 Sydney Peace Prize and joins me now. Thank you so much for your time. Is the battle against climate change still one we can win?
Well, it's getting tougher, certainly, because new research that's come out just in the past few months shows that the target within the Paris Agreement, which is to keep temperatures below 2 degrees, is actually quite reckless. That's double the warming that we're already experiencing. And James Hansen and his colleagues are saying that if we allow temperatures to increase by that much, we could be seeing the end of all coastal cities by the end of this century. It's not too late to give ourselves a fighting chance of avoiding that type of catastrophic warming, but it definitely requires much more ambitious action than our governments came to Paris promising. If you add up all the pledges that governments brought to Paris, and this isn't just the sort of weak pledges that the Australian government brought, but even more ambitious plans brought by the Obama administration, it doesn't lead us even to the temperature targets in the Paris Agreement. It actually leads us to twice that. So we've got our work cut out for us.
After the disappointment of Copenhagen, Paris really seemed like a huge achievement just to get that agreement at the end. How do you get governments now to increase their commitments, given, you know, it was quite a hurdle to even get that agreement in Paris?
Well, it was a hurdle. And, you know, the paradox of the moment we're in is that we have put this off for so long and made the problem so much worse that there can simultaneously be a political breakthrough. And Paris was a political breakthrough. It was a diplomatic breakthrough. And it can still be not nearly enough. And that's also the case about that agreement. And it's even acknowledged in the text of the agreement that there's this huge gap between the temperature targets that governments laid out for themselves and the plans they brought to the agreement, which is why they're talking now about accelerating emissions. The good news is that the climate movement is on the march. There have been demonstrations around the world, part of a campaign called Break Free, over the past 2 weeks, with thousands of people participating from the Philippines to Australia, Indonesia, my country, Canada, that are targeting what we call unburnable carbon, the carbon that has to stay in the ground if we are going to leave ourselves a good shot of keeping temperatures below 1.5 Celsius or even 2 degrees. And that means that the vast majority of the Alberta tar sands in my country has to stay in the ground, and it means that a whole lot of Australian coal has to stay in the ground. And because our political leaders haven't been willing to make those hard choices and stand up to industry, what we're seeing is a global grassroots campaign of people doing that work themselves.
You talk about this global grassroots campaign, and even cite our own country that we're talking in right now, Australia, is where those campaigns are happening. But they don't seem to be having much of a political impact, particularly, as you know, we're in a political campaign now where we've got 7 weeks left or six and a half. I don't know how people are counting it. But ultimately, what we're seeing is that this issue, I mean, there was a debate between the leaders and there wasn't even a question on climate change. It's not really even appearing in the campaign.
Well, I would say that things can really change quickly. You know, in the last presidential cycle 4 years ago, there were I think, 4 presidential debates, and climate change didn't come up during any of them. But if you look at what's going on in the U.S. right now, in the race to lead the Democratic Party, climate change has been an absolutely decisive issue, with Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders competing with each other over who has the more ambitious policy. And they have both very ambitious policies. So things are happening quite quickly. It's true that Australia is the outlier here, right? I mean, there's been a lot more movement in other countries. But one thing I can say about the situation that Australians find themselves in this election campaign is that we, in Canada, where I'm speaking to you from, where I live, we found ourselves in a very similar situation when we were having an election, and none of the major political parties were making climate change an election issue. All of them had decided that this wasn't the issue that Canadians cared about. And because of that, there was a move to put climate on the agenda and to push that from outside of the political process. And it ended up being quite successful. We drafted a people's platform that we called the LEAP Manifesto, which is an action plan for getting to 100% renewable energy in a way that creates huge numbers of jobs, that delivers meaningful justice to Indigenous people. And thousands of Canadians signed it, including some of our most beloved cultural figures like Leonard Cohen and Neil Young. It's been endorsed by 200 organizations, and now it's being debated at the political level. It's been broadly endorsed by one of the major political parties, also by the Green Party. So when political parties refuse to talk about climate change, well, frankly, people have to organize themselves to insist that they do so. And I think Australians are going to have to do that. And I can say that from the Canadian experience, it is possible to force a kind of a people's emergency, because climate change is a five-alarm fire. I mean, I'm speaking to you from a country where we are seeing just horrific forest fires in the Alberta oil sands, in that region where they're mining one of the dirtiest fossil fuels in the world. Right now, even after you heard about the fires in Fort McMurray, where there's a new state of emergency that's just been declared north of Fort McMurray, people are watching this going, this isn't a sign, I don't know what is.
So given all of that and the fact that Australia, you mentioned we're talking about the Australian context as well and this issue in our campaign, obviously Australia's economic prosperity has relied on the fossil fuel industry, which is why that disruption is so controversial. Do you really think that the mindset can shift given the economic reliance of our nation to economic growth based on fossil fuels?
Well, I think there needs to be a credible plan for what the post-extractive economy looks like in Australia. I mean, for a very long time, people have heard this message that equates prosperity, well-being with the extractive industries as if that is the only way to build a healthy economy. And it's simply not the case. So what we've done in Canada with the LEAP Manifesto, as I mentioned, is lay out that vision for how we create huge numbers of well-paying jobs, many more jobs than are delivered by the oil and gas industry or the coal industry, by investing in renewables, by investing in efficiency, public transit, but also by expanding those low-carbon sectors of our economy that are not recognized as being part of the climate solution. And these are teaching kids, caring for the elderly. This is low-carbon work. We can afford to expand those sectors. And in fact, when we do so, it improves quality of life. And I think, frankly, with the absolutely heartbreaking and devastating bleaching of the Great Barrier Reef, I think what people are seeing is that there are huge economic costs to climate change. And this is the problem with fossil fuels, is they don't play well with others, right? The over-reliance on fossil fuels has real impacts for the diversity of an economy, for the ability to have an economy based on not just extraction, but also fishing and ecotourism and so on.
Congratulations again on your Sydney Peace Prize. I understand you're coming in November to collect it. By then, I suppose we'll have a political outcome and you'll be able to assess how the climate policies, at least in this nation, are moving. Thank you so much for your time.
Greatly looking forward to it. Thank you so much.
And that's the author and climate activist, Naomi Klein. Naomi's latest book, Film and Worldwide Campaign, is called This Changes Everything. I'm Patricia Carvelis. This is RN Drive. Our number here, 0418-226-576.
Want to hear about the best party in town this election season? It's a new podcast with me, Frank Kelly.
And me, Patricia Carvelis.
The Party Room, your essential guide to this federal election. Subscribe now. Simply search for The Party Room in your podcast app.
Or listen via the RN website, abc.net.au/RN.